We had a different text for today, and I tried to get my feet in it, but at 5:30 on a Saturday night, I'm slow. It takes me a long time to get it. And this one I've preached to you before back in 2012, and you've heard it at First Baptist a long time ago. But I think I've heard this about good musicians, or not so good musicians. They have a song that kind of gets under their skin. In their whole career, they return to this song because it still speaks to them, and it's not quite finished with them, and they change it a little bit, and then they play it again, and it comes around all through their career. This is one of those songs, one of those messages. It's aimed at me a lot, but it's also at our culture. There's a phrase in this thing that we'll hear later that our culture needs. I'm not so much sure our church needs it right now. There was a time when we did, but our culture needs it. And if our culture needs it, we need it too. Because you know what? That's who we are also. And the people around us need us to live a wide open, full heart life. So I hope you can hear this, even if it's a rerun for some of you in some places, with new ears and new truth. Will you pray with me? Dear God, may these words of my mouth and the meditation of all our hearts be acceptable and pleasing to you, Rock, Redeemer, Friend. Amen. So Jesus had this friendship with these two sisters, and we know them as Martha and Mary. But you know, that's not what their mom and dad called them. Their mom and dad in their native tongue called them Marta and Mara, which I think sounds like twins to me. How about you? I don't think these two sisters were twins, because Martha gives every indication of being the oldest kid, and Mary seems consistent with what we know about young siblings. And old Lazarus, their brother, well, maybe he died because he couldn't stand being in the middle of these two tensions all the time. I don't know. That may not be fair. Well, the story is about these two sisters, and they are not alike. Like all siblings, you know, they're distinct, different, delightfully different, and sometimes maddeningly different. But they belong together in the differences. This is the phrase, belong together in their differences. Their parents have given them the sister names, Martha and Mara, and they have the same family blood running in their skin around their lives. They share similar family stories, and today we find them under the very same roof. They do belong together in their differences. Paul Duke said this phrase the first time I heard it, and it was in a sermon back in 1990, and the phrase stuck with me, and the sermon leans a lot on that phrase, together in our differences. These two sisters belong together in their differences, and they are under the very same roof, but today our story finds them in two different rooms, separate parts of the house. Mary has gone her way, and Martha has gone her way, and one of them is mad at the other for being different, really. The story is about these two women, symbols for all people everywhere. They have different styles. They make different choices. And Jesus has something to say to the choices that these two are free to make and free to let each other make. But you know what? The story is not just about these two sisters. It's about you and me. Jesus comes home in us and finds our soul divided into two faces. One wants to manage and rage and race and do. Martha. One wants to just be still and listen and reflect and pray. Mary. One part is active, one part is passive, one part is longing to pray, one part is looking at her watch. Let's go. What are we waiting for? Come on now. Snapping her fingers. Jesus has come to the house to sit down with both halves and to teach them, to remind them that they're sisters, to help them join hands again, to live an integrated life. Now imagine when these kids were little, like all kids, they played together, they laughed together and sang together and swang on the swing. Can you say swang? I don't think you can. They hung out under the tree in a swing that maybe Jesus made with his dad because they're good friends. I don't know. They hung out. They skipped. They laughed together. Jesus has come home to reunite them and to remind them. You know, most of us feel a little bit like Martha, or we feel a little bit more like Mary, but we can feel the tug of the other because we have part of both of these people in us. These two parts of us don't get along very well in us. these two parts of ourselves sometimes aren't kind to each other. Do you feel that within yourself? These two parts sometimes in us do not speak to each other, but Christ has come this day to make us whole. So Jesus and his disciples come to town, and Martha welcomes them into her home. Luke says it's Martha's home. Maybe it really is Martha's home, and Mary just comes over a whole lot, likes hanging out at the sister's place. Maybe it's Martha's home, and they both live there. Maybe they share the house, but people call it Martha's house because Martha is the oldest and she does most of the work, so they call it Martha's house. Either way, it's fitting to call it Martha's house because Martha's way there is dominant. It's the dominant way. It's the dominant way here too where we live, isn't it? She represents taking charge, hands-on management, a bustle of movement, a flurry of energy. Martha is a fixer. In our culture, we value the Martha people the most, or at least a whole lot. It's the Martha people that we put our hopes in to take charge and to solve our problems and to save the world. We want all of our systems and all of our institutions to look a whole lot like, well, what Martha's house probably looked like. Everything in its place, in order, running on time. Martha's the one who welcomes Jesus when he comes to the door. Knock on the door. She goes to answer. She embraces him. He embraces her. Oh, thanks for coming, she says. Well, thanks for asking. Dinner's not quite ready. Jesus takes a spliff. Oh, Martha, that smells great. How about I go with you into the kitchen and help you finish? Now, you know that part's not in the text, right? But don't you think that's what Jesus would say? How could the incarnation of God not know his way around the kitchen? How could the Christ not be a pretty darn good cook? Didn't he say earlier, I came here not to serve? Wait a minute, he didn't say that. He came here earlier not to be served, but to serve. Ooh, I could use an extra day of practice on this. He came here not to be served, but to serve, which to me means he must have some of Martha in his skin too, like most of us. But you know, old Martha, she says, you know, I wouldn't dream of that. Here, have a seat right here. Here, how about some tea? You just rest here. Here's a newspaper. Relax. I'll come and get you when dinner's ready. I'm so glad you're here. And Jesus is a good guest. And so he smiles and he lets her have it her way. You know, Mary's there too. And Mary greets him too. And then when Jesus sits down, Mary, well, she sits down too. But she doesn't sit on the sofa next to him or in a chair. She sits down on the floor at his feet. Well, this is a little bit odd, really. Sitting on the floor at Jesus' feet? But Jesus doesn't get nervous about it. And evidently, Mary wasn't nervous about it either. No rabbi really let a woman sit at his feet, but Jesus did, for this woman who was bold enough and eager enough and trusting enough to put herself at the position of a disciple, right at Jesus' feet. So Luke says Jesus began to teach, and Mary listened, her heart wide open, and she asked questions and was learning just like a disciple of the word, right at Jesus' feet. But meanwhile, back in the kitchen, well, Martha has got a 5-course dinner in the making, and the soup is starting to look a little scary, and the veggies need cutting, and the roast needs carving, and that pie isn't done. And where is that sister of mine? And oh, I sure hope he likes this. And did I salt those potatoes? And what is she doing out there anyway? And oh my, the biscuits. And who does she think she is anyway? And why do I always find myself in here? And all of a sudden, she finds herself busting through that kitchen door out into the living room saying to Jesus, don't you care? Don't you care that my sister has abandoned me to do all the work by myself? Why don't you tell her to get back in the kitchen and give me some help? Whew. And there's one of those big pauses. You know the kind, everybody puts their eye down and looks the other way. I'm not going to make eye contact. Just looking around. It's silent, though, except for probably the huffing or the breathing of Martha's breath, which, you know, Mary has had to hear her whole life. Well, Mary, having heard this before, knowing that's her cue, she starts to get up from Jesus' feet. But Jesus puts his hand on Mary's shoulder and stops her from getting up. And then he looks to Martha and says, "Martha, Martha." You know, he says her name twice because that's a gentle way. And maybe because it takes two times to get her eyes lifted to his eyes. "Martha, Martha, you're anxious and you're distracted by many things." It seems pretty obvious that he'd say that. And I don't know if somebody giggled there, like, yeah, she's... But you know what? When we find ourselves in that space, the obvious word sometimes is the most needed word. You are distracted by many things. In Greek, the word literally means pulled apart. He's saying, "Dear one, you are all pulled to pieces, aren't you? Trying to stir too many pots at one time. Stir too many pots at one time. But a simple meal is fine, and a simple choice is fine. Mary's made her choice, and she chose well, and neither you or I should take Mary's choice from her." And you know what? That's as far as Luke takes us in the story. It stops right there. What do you do with this? Does it keep playing in your mind? What all happened here? Do you go back and try to figure out the damage? How did this unfold? What is the truth in this thing? If you get all the way back to the beginning, way at the start, the very first thing, what do you see went wrong here? What's broken in this deal? Maybe we have to notice that Martha's made a choice. Maybe that's the first thing we see, a free choice. No one's choice but hers to undertake a five-course production. A five-course production. She's free to choose it, and she's free to change it anywhere along the way, and she's free, just like you and I are, to ask for the help that she needs. But having made this decision, she now decides to be mad about it and mad at others for not climbing into that choice with her. Now, if you have made a choice about what to do with your day or what to do with your life, why make the further decision to be miserable about it? Martha, you're freer than you know to choose and to change, to choose the course you take, to choose your heart's disposition towards the course you've taken. Please don't forget your freedom to choose and to change, and to take responsibility for what you've chosen and for how you've changed. Also, notice when we get back there, I think that Martha's focus is in fragments, which is really to say she has no focus there at all. Too many courses at once, too many pots for one life to stir, too many directions to be running. And so Luke and Jesus both tell us, well, Martha is pulled apart. But the real split isn't between that oven and the counter or the kitchen and the dining room table. The real split is in her mind, because her mind is not on the work that she's chosen. Part of her has separated into wanting to please somebody, and part of her has separated in wanting to judge somebody else. So to begin with, she's trying to do so much because she wants to impress and please a guest. She's got one eye on the asparagus and the other eye on Jesus' approval. But even worse, she makes the split of judging someone else. Maybe Martha's jealous of Mary's time with Jesus. Or maybe Martha thinks it's wrong for Mary to assert herself into the men's world of the word back in the day. Maybe she just thinks Mary's lazy. Martha has a right to disagree, but she's let it distract her, which is the poor choice we all make, that we all fall to when we choose to judge each other. And at this seems to be the very point of Jesus' rebuke. You've made your choice. Tend to it. Let your sister tend to hers. Let your spouse tend to their choice. Let your friends, let your colleagues, let your enemies tend to their choices. Let nothing distract you from making the very best choice you can make. Well, what in the world is the best choice to make? Jesus says, simple. You choose best when you choose simple. You don't need to tap dance for Jesus. Your life is not a production. or a courtroom or a contest. You and I are not here to perform or to earn any person's approval. Your life is a gift. And so you live it and you give it as freely and as fully as you can to God. And right here is where Mary has something to teach us. Because Mary's made herself still and fixed and focused. Her heart is at rest. And her eyes are fixed on the face of her calling. Christ is the face of all our callings. And I have a friend who likes to say Christ is the sovereign simplicity at the center of all our complexity. And I really like that because, well, life isn't simple. And we can't spend all of our time by the river praying and reflecting any more than we could manage to race and rage and do and manage all the time like Martha. It seems the story's point is not to make Martha's way superior or Mary's way superior, but Mary's single-minded focus on Christ is critical. And her life's position, unmovable at Jesus' feet, is essential. From this place, you can do hard work, real work, work that needs to get done in the world and in the kitchen and at home and in the office and out in the street in the neighborhoods, because now all your work in this chaotic flood of distraction, but it rises from your being, through who you are. Your work becomes like music, I think, that rises from your center. You lay at the feet of the cross with your eyes on Jesus. Jesus was not lifting Mary's way over Martha's way that day, but inviting them to an integration, to be again together in their differences. You ever wonder what happened next after this thing? Do you have an active imagination? You get to these stories and create something new? I do this all the time, and my friend Paul Duke does it too. Here's what he said he thought might happen next. Jesus says, Martha, I think your biscuits might be burning. And he gets up and he runs into the kitchen ahead of him. And Martha, not far behind, jumps into the kitchen and followed by Mary. And all three of them then work in that kitchen to get that meal from the kitchen to the dining room table, where they all enjoy a long meal, where they can laugh about where things didn't go right and enjoy the bread they're breaking together. And after dinner, they do the dishes. And in case you're curious, Jesus washes, Mary dries, and Martha puts everything back in its proper place because she's the only one that knows exactly where everything is supposed to be anyhow. Then after it's all put away and they've put the towel back down on the counter, they go back into that living room and they all sit down. Jesus sits back down in that same chair. But the two sisters, they both sit at Jesus' feet. And right there with the lamplight on their faces, Jesus tells them another story about God's boundless love, which is about the time Martha quietly slips her hand down, finds and takes hold of her sister Mary's hand. You know, there's something like that waiting to happen between those of us who are Martha and those of us who are Mary, those of us who voted red and those of us who voted blue. Something like that waiting to happen inside of your life and inside of my life, both. Jesus comes home in us to make us whole, to help us again be one together in our differences. Will you pray with me? Oh God, where we haven't been one, make us one.